I'm Jamie Hurst, and for the MSU Denver Alumni Association, we're excited to bring you Bird Talk, a podcast about our alumni, their careers, and their lives.
I apologize if I'm speaking like a politician. I've been around.
No, you're not the first on this podcast.
Okay.
Man, do I have so many questions that I'd like to ask you over a beer. I'll tell you that.
For sure.
Today's guest is Jeremy Medina. Jeremy is a 2021 graduate earning an individualized degree in society, health, and policy. As a dedicated community leader and advocate for positive change, Jeremy is keenly focused on giving a voice to marginalized communities. While on campus, Jeremy did just that as the MSU Denver student body president and as an active member of the president's cabinet. Since graduating, Jeremy has continued his advocacy, earning his master's in public administration, and serves in multiple capacities across the region, including serving as a board member for Rocky Mountain Region at Young Invincibles and the Jefferson County Democratic Latino Initiative. He is a commissioner for outreach in CD7. Jeremy serves as the vice chair of Colorado Young Democrats, is the political director for Jeffco Young Dems, and has worked at the state capitol as the chief of staff. Jeremy also is one of the youngest delegates in the 2024 Democratic National Convention. And apparently, Jeremy has free time somewhere. And with it, he loves to swim, hike, and teach lifeguarding and CPR certifications. Jeremy is a first-generation Roadrunner alumnus and a proud descendant of the displaced Aurarian community. Jeremy, I'm so excited to welcome you home and to Bird Talk.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for that. And it was amazing to hear all my accomplishments. I was like, I didn't even know I was that busy until you said all those things.
Yeah. My first question is really, when do you sleep? My goodness, the amount of things that you were involved in is just, it's inspiring. You know, I think about how inspiring it is to see young people just so committed to things that they believe in, to passions that they have. And I think that's what comes across as I've learned a little bit more about you is that, man, you believe in some stuff and you go full blown in. And so I think that's incredibly awesome. And I just also wonder, how the heck do you have the time and effort and patience to just get your hands as dirty as you do?
No, for sure. Yeah. I'm very thankful to be on this podcast. I remember hearing about this podcast when it first came out. I think it was like two years ago.
Just about. Yeah.
Yeah. I know all my friends from MSU, they're like, you're going to be on that one day. I'm like, yeah, maybe like in 10 years. Like, so it's an honor to be on it much sooner. But yeah, what motivates me to stay busy right now is I feel like there's so much going on in our world and our communities where I don't want to just kind of sit back. I feel like I have the resources and tools that I've learned from MSU Denver and through grad school. And I definitely feel like I need to get up and help where needed. Mm-hmm. So that really drives me right now. I feel like it, you know, I definitely lived long enough to be when I'm 70 or 80, I would regret like not doing anything. So it's definitely one of those things where I'm like, no, we have to, because our future is on the line in terms of just so many things that are going on in the world. As you mentioned, I'm a first generation graduate student, and I'm trying to like show like my younger siblings and, you know, younger people in my family that, hey, this is possible. Like, you know, no matter where we come from, we have a pathway and we can truly keep going on it.
Well, I think that's incredible. When I learned that you know, you're a descendant of the displaced Aurarian community, so you're about as homegrown as it possibly gets, right? So I'd love to hear a little bit about your family's history with the campus. And like, was it important to you at that point in time to get your degree from MSU Denver and be on this campus and be kind of the next part of the story in your family's kind of longevity, or did it just kind of happen that way? So how'd you get here?
Yeah, that's a good question. So back in, I guess, 2016, 2017, when I started at MSU Denver, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I was like, I want to be a teacher, maybe a paramedic, a journalist. I just don't know where I want to go. I was applying to other schools like CU Boulder, UNC. And then unfortunately, right after high school, I got sick with like a bad infection from antibiotics. And that kind of really derailed my path. And I was like, okay, I'm sick right now. Like, we're trying to figure out how to treat this. I ended up becoming like vegetarian from it. And like all these other things kind of happened. And I knew MSU Denver was right downtown. I live in Lakewood at the time. And it was super close by. And I ended up kind of just going there in a sense. It wasn't kind of like my first plan. I will also say too, like back then, I feel like, and I'm really glad MSU Denver is not getting this messaging in a sense. So back then, like MSU Denver across the state was looked at as like a community college, like it had that stereotypical vibe. Mm-hmm. And definitely one of those people now that says, no, it's a university. It's a place where you really can grow and soar. And all the colleges on the Aurarian campus are really places where you can soar. But yeah, I ended up going there, and it actually came up in conversation when I was like, I think towards the end of my undergraduate degree at MSU, where I was like, hey, you know, just FYI, like my aunt told me, she was like, yeah, we used to live on the campus. And I'm like, why didn't nobody tell me? Like, and my aunt was like, well, I didn't know. I thought your mom told you. So it was one of those things where it was kind of just came out of the blue.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, like it's so interesting to me how I didn't plan on going here. But when I came here, I found my story. I found my family story.
Yeah.
Once in, I immediately started researching more, finding out how come no one told me before. And it kind of just had a full circle moment. So it was one of those things where I felt like it was meant to happen. I didn't really plan on it to go to MSU, but I'm really glad that I did.
Have you seen the I Am Auraria exhibit at the library?
I have.
Or have you even heard about it?
Yeah, it's been on my to-do list. I've been so busy, but
it's pretty
rare for me to go back to campus. But when I do, I definitely want to go see that.
Yeah, you got to prioritize it. I was just over at the library last week doing a different project and stopped by. And it just every time I see the images of families being married at St. Cajetan's and all the just the liveliness of this community, it really just kind of puts in perspective to me how important this institution is and really what that history has looked like. I do think we've done a good job as an institution in honoring this land and where it's come from and kind of, you know, the story of MSU Denver in general. But I definitely would recommend you go and stop by that next time you're on campus.
For sure.
Sweet. So one of the things that stands out to me when I think about your experience here is your time with student government. And so I'd love to hear a little bit about that and kind of what piqued your interest in that space. And is that really what helped you get on your course from thinking about all the things you said, you know, being a teacher, all these other ideas into the career that you've kind of been in this really grassroots and advocacy-led organizations. So I'd love to hear about your time in student government. And then I'm also just personally curious if you were a part of government at the time that we had the transition from the Constitution to the shared governance structure that our student government went through.
For sure. Yeah. I think honestly, when I started in 2017 at MSU, I should have gotten involved right away with student government. Growing up in elementary school, I was always a part of the student council. And then I guess towards college, I kind of forgot about it. And I was like, why did I forget about it? Now thinking back, during my early years at undergrad at MSU, I was involved with Met Media. I was really, you know, interested in doing journalism, being an anchor. I did weather. I was involved at the newspaper as well. I remember COVID happened and we all shifted online and I had a lot of my friends and whatnot say oh, you should join student government. And I'm like, oh, maybe. I guess they kind of saw something in me that I didn't see in me in that moment. To make the story short, I ended up getting written in as a candidate for student government. And it was right in the middle, literally for the first year of the transition from the old traditional model to a new shared governance model. I ended up getting voted in and I was so glad that I did because it was really one of those moments where I think really emphasized my journey and my career right now and where I want to go in life. And it was a moment of professional growing, not just for myself, but for the university, for students across campus, especially when COVID, you know, we were remote. It was a moment to really kind of figure out, you know, where we are at as a university, as students, and also to experiment in a way. During that, my first year of leading the council members and leading the conversations, I learned so much from that experience. We're like, okay, there's no government. We're going to throw 15, you know, up to 20 people in there and we'll see what happens. And it was truly one of those real life world scenarios. I feel like we were on a TV show almost. What would you do if this happens? I definitely learned to observe and to sit back and strategically think and, you know, let others have a voice. And I'm really glad with the work they're doing now. I think that it's come a long way. It still has a long way to go. I think that this model itself is a great way, especially at college universities, to have that professional development. I hope other universities across the state start to learn from MSU Denver, and not just within student government. MSU Denver, I feel like, is truly a university that could lead by example in changing people's lives across the state.
I couldn't agree more. For the benefit of maybe our listeners that were less on campus during that transition, could you, for all of us, just kind of explain how the student body shifted the way that it governs itself and what was kind of the precipice behind that?
Yeah. So I wasn't originally a part of the initial thinking. It was the spring semester before that fall semester. And it sounded like just a lot of the former student government folks, they wanted to engage the student community about coming up with an idea of how could we still govern on a shared equal thinking level and still get things done. And it sounds like, you know, at the point, like it was voted in from the student community. The students, the community really wanted a model where it wasn't so much about power within just one person as like the president, the vice president. It was more about power within a whole collective group. And that's something that really kind of fascinated me, wanted me to still be a part of that. And, you know, it was really inspiring to see everyone's voice mattered, everyone's voice and vote mattered. And it wasn't as so authoritarian as we kind of see across the nation and whatnot in our local and state governments as well. And not that those are not good for those models, but it's more like, how can we change this up a bit? How can we try to see if this can actually happen maybe at a local level one day? So
no, I think it's an experiment that for sure questions a lot of the norms that people had just come to expect from governments. And I love that MSU Denver was at the heart of that, because I think you're exactly right. There's a lot that we can learn about how we can make things more accessible, less discriminatory, more diverse in the way that we do just about anything. But it always comes with challenging the status quo, and it becomes contentious at the beginning. And it becomes a hard thing for people to wrap their brain around, because oftentimes we hear like, no, this is the way you do something. And it's like, yeah, that's a way to do something. And so I've been encouraged to see that our students had enough foresight and thoughtfulness to challenge that status quo, and excited to see about the work that the student government continues to do moving forward.
Yeah, most definitely. And I just to add on to that too, I think it's so cool that during my time, and I do kind of like check in on the current student government here and there, just like social media and whatnot. And it's amazing to see how that kind of model really lets people come out of their comfort zone and be someone who they're always meant to be. The old model, in a sense, kind of let people like kind of sit back more and not really had a voice. And I think this model really kind of lets people thrive and say, hey, like, I'm over here, actually, and I want to say something about this. So yeah, I'm really excited to see the growth of it. I think that this is something that doesn't happen overnight, as it's a work in progress. And I can't imagine like 10 years from now how, you know, hopefully maybe other universities will adapt this model for their student government.
Yeah, it's incredible work. So you picked up your master's from CU Denver, so still stayed on campus, which I love. And then you've been serving, as we kind of talked about in your intro, across so many different capacities in the region. My question in there is, was your experience at MSU Denver's student government kind of the springboard in that space? And then what skills and assets that you crafted while you were here have you found being the most persuasive in kind of the path that you've taken now?
Sure, 100%. I think growing up, I always saw myself as a leader. I didn't really try to aim to be the number one person in the room. I think I've always kind of gravitated towards it. And I think I've done so naturally, especially, you know, being a part of the student government at MSU. It really let me kind of almost like prep me up for what was to come next. I remember sitting in challenging conversations over tons of people just kind of arguing back and forth and just, you know, trying to get their point. And without that experience, I think, especially going into the real world where there's more challenging conversations that are happening and more challenging times that we're living in, it really kind of let me grow and become more of a leader that I guess I always was, but also a stronger leader, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think, you know, during that time, it really kind of projected me to reach out even further. I will say when I was in student government, I was mainly involved on campuses, initiatives and organizations. And after that experience, I was like, okay, what's next? How can I get more involved? And during that time, you know, there's no playbook of like, how do you get involved in politics? It's really like your own researching and networking and kind of finding your way through the cracks. And it took a while for me to kind of get where I'm at. And there's still more obstacles that I have to get through. But that experience gave me that spark in terms of finding out, how do I help the next community?
Oh, I love that. So you did your career. You started with an internship with Senator Bennett. You worked as the chief of staff to Representative Marvin. What has surprised you most about your time at the Colorado Capitol?
That's a good question. Just working at the Colorado State Capitol, there's so much at play. It's like a roller coaster. I took several like government classes in the poli sci department at MSU and at CU Denver as well. And you learn about these things in school, but when you're actually in the room, front row center, you're like, whoa, this is it. It seems like it's like a chess game in a sense, like everyone's strategically playing a game to win an objective or, you know, the mission or like pass legislation. And I didn't realize how complicated the chess game is, if that makes sense. It's so that's something that's really amazed me. And I've seen tireless representatives and senators and interns and aides and chief of staffs, and people are always working across the clock. And it's amazing to see how the system flows so naturally, but yet it's so complicated.
I absolutely agree with that. And I love that you use chess as a reference here, because I do think, especially in the current political climate, right, there's a lot of contention, right? And I think sometimes it's about the feeling that I'm at least feeling in my communities and in my spaces is that there's a right and there's a wrong. And so there's a win and there's a loss. And I love the idea of chess, because if you truly are a chess player and you understand this space, chess is about sacrifice for an end result. And so there's times that, depending on when you look at that chessboard, you might be like, oh God, that's totally in this space. You know, you have more chess pieces on there than less. And to be so strategic and so thoughtful and so patient in the process of something like chess, or in this case, politics, you have to recognize that, yeah, you're going to sacrifice a pawn every once in a while. And we have to have those concessions, because it's not necessarily about being right every single time. It's about having a longer term strategy that in the end is going to accomplish the largest amount of your goals. And so I love that you use that analogy.
I hate chess. So when I found out about this whole system, like, oh, this is going to be a journey. There's moments where I've seen state reps, senators, and just other people that are making these decisions figure out what's the best solution to move forward, but also how can we make this into long-term planning? And that's something that I've really been thankful just to witness firsthand, and kind of still witness firsthand, of how we can truly help communities, whether it's today or tomorrow or in the next 5-10 years.
Oh, love it. So you mentioned that you were with Met Media, which I did see. And just as a sidebar, all of your Met Media credits have Jeremy spelt with a Y. Was there an intentional transition from a Y to an I, or were they just misspelling your name all the time?
No, yeah, that's a good question, actually. I probably just started the I thing, like, I think 2 years ago, a year or two ago. It's interesting. Identity becomes a fascinating thing that you kind of learn more as, I guess, we get older.
Yeah.
And I was just talking with some friends and whatnot, and they were like, how come you should have done it like with an I, because your full name's Jeremiah, and like, it would make sense. And I'm like, I never thought of that. Like, I never thought of adding the I. So I just started adding the I recently, and it seems to be working. I mean, growing up, I've always been called Jeremiah or Jer. Typically, if I'm called my full name, it's when I'm in trouble from my mom or whatnot.
100%. 100%.
And then, yeah, in high school, folks just started calling me Jeremy. And then I was just like, well, the only way to spell Jeremy is with a Y. And then, yeah, so it's just a recent addition. I don't know. I hope it makes me more unique as well as you. But yeah, it's one of those recent things.
No, and I do appreciate that. And I think you're right. When I think about who I was at 18, 19, 20 years old, and while there is still so much of the core of me that is the same, you're absolutely right that as we age, we understand more about who we are, but also who we are in the context of the environments and the worlds that we've lived in. And man, I had a very sheltered childhood, which was fantastic. I'll tell you, my staff will tell you too. I tell this joke all the time that, like, oh no, I was at my height at 17 years old. Like, and it's just been a progressive getting less cool, you know? And so much of that is just the environments that you're in and what you're up against. And so I do appreciate when we have those moments, especially we're starting to realize there's other realities and truths other than the ones that were in the communities and environments in which we grew up in, to say, oh no, like, this is a part of my identity. And yeah, that was just something I absorbed, but maybe I can be intentional in that space. So total sidebar, but I do appreciate that.
Yeah, no, for sure. 100%. I don't think I'll be changing any other like addition moving forward, though. I told my friends and whatnot, I'm like, okay, that's it.
So. Fair enough. So I was looking at some of your Met Media stories and some of the photos that you've taken over time. And I'm just curious if you, since having kind of this background now where you've been in this journalistic scenario and dynamic, and now in the political side, how has your journalistic experience had an impact on your career in public service? And then, so I want you to answer that. I have all these two-part questions, because I just want to know how they kind of have tied together. But what I really want to get at is, what are your thoughts on how we start to walk back this adversarial narrative around media and politics, or, you know, media and public service? It's like something I've never seen. So is it even possible? And what, as someone who's been in both of those spaces, what are your thoughts?
I'm really glad that I had that spark to be like a journalist when I was in undergrad, and I'm still a news junkie, I guess. I love watching like the Today Show. It's so interesting, kind of like going back to my story about how I ended up at MSU. I didn't really realize how much my journalist and my communications background that I have within my individualized degree program at MSU really helped right now in the political atmosphere. a lot of folks, especially here in Colorado, just within my previous roles, I was really thankful to be assigned as like the community coordinator for social media and engagement throughout the state. And it's something that we rely on so much every day, like whether that's through Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, X, you know, Twitter. And it's such an important thing that we have in our current media landscape. And I think that it's also so hard to keep up. I feel like we have tons of independent journalists, we have tons of independent news sources, and it's so hard to figure out what is factual information and what is information that I should be sharing and whatnot. Something that I really learned in this previous role that I had, it's important to just spark that community engagement. It's important to keep conversations going, and it's important to have different perspectives. I think that when it comes down to factual information, it's so important to get it right from the source. I know it's hard to have that off button. Like, I'm always on TikTok like a lot, and it's addicting, but it's so important for me from what I've learned is to kind of figure out what are we letting into our own perception of like what's going on in the world, and how can we share positivity, or how can we get another message from a different source, if that makes sense.
No, it totally makes sense. I think about it all the time that we're so easily susceptible to the bubbles that we live in, just because we tend to surround ourselves with like-minded people who maybe share the same values. Now, with the advent of AI, I mean, they're only giving me certain information. They're not giving me things that are contrary to my thoughts or opinions. And so it is such a challenging thing to be so aware of. And so I teach a law class here at MSU Denver, and we just actually went through our First Amendment. We're in our constitutional law section now, which I'll tell you has been very hard to teach this semester because it's a lot of, here's where it exists and stands now, but we'll see over the course of time how things get reinterpreted, thought through, and changed a bit. But it is funny when I watch students in class respond to this idea of why the First Amendment and our freedom of our press specifically is so important. And you hit on it. It's this idea that it encourages dialogue in communities when it's potentially something that's different than what we think of or can be very uncomfortable. And then there's just this weird cliff that we're just dangling over the edge of, which is, to your point, what is the truth and the factualness of that? How many times has it been interpreted before you've received it based on where you're getting your information? And so it gets a little challenging. I just love that you're entering in this like young political career of yours with this mindset and some experience in the journalism side, because I think that's always going to be a huge asset for you based on the experiences that you have to be able to bring both sides to the table.
For sure. Something to add to that too, like right now, every time I open up Instagram, Facebook, or whatever, if I see something pop up and it's like announcing, for example, like I mentioned, I follow the Today Show and I adore Hoda Kotb, the anchor. And I feel like she was,
obviously.
Yeah, I feel like she was leaving. And I had to like go to Google and I was like, is she really leaving? Because yeah. I saw it. I was like, I wasn't sure if this was real or not. So I'm always doing that, like just a second. No, just to reaffirm that it is true or not. So,
well, and I think that's especially growing up like in the, you know, in the 80s and 90s, and like everything was scientific method. You know, you have your theory, you test, you retest, you do all this stuff. Like, I am so maybe not optimistic and trusting because I hear something once and I'm like, I need to validate that. That is my natural inherent response. And I think it's part of being that, you know, Gen X type generation where we're just mostly curious, but mostly untrusting. But what I've seen is that, to your point, there's so many people that don't just take that extra step of just asking the internet, right? And again, you might get a totally weird answer that might not be true or whatever the case is. But gosh, yeah, did Hoda really leave? Because we need to find that out, you know? Just that extra 30 seconds and with that information so much readily at your hand can make such a difference in how we consume information. And it gives ourselves a little bit more credibility to start being a critical thinker in that moment and say like, wow, I heard this thing. My biases tell me that this could be true, or my fears tell me that this absolutely can't be true, or my community and my bubble has been regurgitating something similarly. But gosh, we need to just ask those follow-up questions. And again, for as fantastic as the internet is, that I have it in my pocket at all points in time, I just constantly remind myself that like I go back to when I was, you know, growing up and in these formidable years, if I wanted to validate something, I had to either pull an encyclopedia off, off of the wall, right? Or have conversations with multiple people, which allowed for a much more natural and grassroots way of having some of these tough conversations. It's definitely a challenge that so much of our information is just coming from the internet. And if we're smart enough to validate it with other internet sources, great, that's a good first step. But man, we're missing out on that dialogue.
For sure. And something that's helped me to kind of navigate it, especially in the political landscape, like, of course, when campaigns are running and whatnot, I think it's so valuable for community, whether you're not so much involved in politics or not. Like, there's so many like organizations across the state that you can just stop by and they have open dialogue conversations and you can ask questions or you can follow them on newsletters or you can get coffee with them. I think it's so important nowadays because, as you mentioned, like there's so much being thrown at us. We need to make time for that, but also like there's so much avenues if you don't have the time. Like you can follow their website, their social media, but it's so important. I really encourage everyone to double check your resources and making sure that, you know, it's valid and whatnot.
Yeah, especially if it confirms your beliefs and your biases, because then it's just almost too easy. And this is where the inner skeptic in me is like, eh, that was too easy to find something that agrees with me. I can't really be that right, you know?
Right.
So I do appreciate that. So you've been kind of in this political professional space for a bit, right? Working at the state capitol and then recently with the Harris for President campaign. What role as a professional, like, and this is more just out of curiosity, because I think about all the people that join these campaign efforts and that are actively in this political process that we don't see on camera, that are not the people that are necessarily stating policy decisions or anything along those lines. So what role do professionals like you play in kind of the entire political process? And then if you could even go a step further and talk about how important the impact of your role on supporting democracy and civic engagement in general.
Yeah, of course. I think any role that I take on, I'm always surrounded by community. So we have so many people from the community that are currently in public service that are working with senators' offices or congresspeople. And it's amazing to see when a campaign comes around, like everyone kind of just unites and, you know, says, hey, like we need to stand up for our community. That was really important for me to be around. And it was really inspiring. Like behind these closed doors, there's so much movement. There's long days, 12 plus hour days, but it's amazing that to see all these people that are living in Denver or the suburbs around the Denver metro area working together towards a common goal. But yeah, and then I just totally forgot your second question.
That's okay. I'm really bad at compound questions.
No worries.
Something I should very much be more cognizant of on a podcast.
I'm a little rusty, actually. I was just thinking, when I was at MedMedia, I did so many interviews, but it's been a while since I conducted an interview.
Fair enough. I don't even know what my question is. I want to get at the heart of this idea of healthy democracies and participating in the democratic process. And so maybe I don't even ask that second question and I just ask a new one. What advice would you give to younger people that maybe have interests in engaging with issues that are important to them? How should they get involved in the democratic process? Where is the need and where are the places for impact?
That's a good question. So it's a challenge. I'm not going to lie. Us young people, we're powered. We're powered up and we're ready to go. But kind of going back to my chess game analogy, it's a chess game. And for me personally, what I found out is there's ways to make yourself noticeable. You make your voice heard even bigger, but you definitely need to do it strategically. There's so many spaces that young people can be involved in. It's super important that you definitely bring your chair to this table because you're not going to be asked to come sit at it. You definitely need to make some room for it, but you need to do it in steps. So when I started back after MSU Denver, I ran for that state outreach commission for Congressional District 7. And just simply me throwing my name in the ring of people who can be commissioners for CD7. And I was elected for that. And right after that, I got a phone call from this random person who saw my speech. And it was like, hi, I'm so-and-so. I want to help you. Mm-hmm. And from there, it was like a full-on network system where it opened so many more doors where I can actually comfortably sit down with my chair at this huge table of voices. I know folks might say like, okay, time is hard right now. Like we need to keep moving faster. And we do. Doing it strategically, doing it with support systems, reaching out to other young voters, young people that are actively engaged. And it will all naturally fall into flow, if that makes sense. It's just so important to come up with a good plan and be optimistic about it. And to really make sure that you're coming at this in a proactive approach that says, hey, I want to help. I'm so-and-so. And what can I do to help? I will also say too, I'm a huge believer in unpaid internships, unpaid volunteer work. Mm-hmm. And I think being a voice, you definitely are going to have to go through some uncomfortable situations. I will say like when I first started MSU Denver, I was very timid, very quiet, and I have grown to be vocal. and trying to get my voice into these certain spaces, you definitely have to go out of your comfort zone. You have to be willing to say, okay, I'm going to take the leap of faith and see what happens. But if you do that with other community members, you'll be okay.
It's true. The comfort zone and the leap of faith, to your point, we've been doing this podcast for a long time. And spoiler alert, I'm going to ask you rapid fire questions at the end. And one of those is this idea of advice to students. And what we hear oftentimes is actually what you just said, which is this idea of like, be brave, try something else, get uncomfortable, and realize that growth oftentimes comes from learning how to navigate your level of discomfort in new situations. Because if we just stay stagnant in a lot of the places that we're in, we grow very comfortable in those settings. And then anything that does challenge our status quo becomes something that we just reject immediately. And so I love this idea that, especially as a young person, learning that so early on, man, you're going to be ahead of your peers, because it takes a lot of us 30, 40, 50 years to realize that discomfort isn't the enemy. It's really a potential and a sign for growth. And so if we can embrace that and go so far as to seek out those situations, knowing that it's going to be hard, it's going to be challenging, we're going to feel awkward as heck in so many of these situations, that those can be really great catapults for meeting our goals, maybe trying to have the impact that we want to have, for moving our careers forward, whatever the case might be. So I love that you've learned that so young.
For sure, yeah. In those moments, there's going to be crying, there's going to be tears, there's going to be like confusion.
Absolutely.
But again, I think that once you just put yourself in those spaces, you'll notice people will come out and reach out to you and say, hey, it's going to be okay. Or like, how can I help? And you'll learn that a community is just kind of, it's always been there, but they just kind of show themselves a little bit more once you show yourself.
Yeah, there is so much to be said about the act of choosing to be vulnerable and how that just almost invites other people to play whatever role needs to happen in that space that includes their vulnerability. I think about that often, where there's times where maybe I feel like I'm totally alone on an island. And so then I'm keeping up my fortitude and I'm just being as strong outwardly as it can appear, while probably crippling inside, right? Because if I showed any of this, no one's going to understand and nobody's going to be there. And as soon as I let myself be vulnerable, I realize, oh no, there's an entire population in my community and in my circles and in my family and my friends, or whatever the case might be, that are actually probably feeling similar things or have at least felt that way, so they can provide some sort of solace in those spaces. And we oftentimes, I think, undersell and sell short our community for being willing to stand up in those situations. And so then it just discourages us from ever showing any sort of vulnerability.
Definitely.
The seasons are changing and there's a chill in the air. So you know what that means. It's time to wrap yourself up in Roadrunner spirit. For the first time since 2018, you can get your custom MSU Denver Ugly holiday sweater. And if history tells us anything, you don't want to delay, as these are a hot item, both literally and figuratively. We sell out quickly. So visit msudenver.edu/alumni today and get your sweaters before the cold sets in. Roadrunner special alert. MSU Denver is rising, and we want you to rise with us. For the first time ever, MSU Denver is in a comprehensive fundraising campaign with a goal of raising $100 million in support of our deserving university and students. Grab every Roadrunner you know and join us on February 19th as we celebrate our incredible university and look towards the future. Learn about our fundraising priorities, embrace your Roadrunner school spirit, and find out how you can help all Roadrunners rise. So save the date, February 19, 2025. You won't want to miss it. This episode is brought to you by flu season. Go get your tweetment if you're feeling under the feather.
I wanted to give a shout out to a professor, if that's okay.
Dan. Please.
Okay. So somebody at MSU Denver who really kind of let me grow, and going back to the idea of like, hey, if you put yourself into trying something new, like you never know what you're going to get. Right when COVID happened, when we were like remote, I was taking some Spanish classes. It was like a difficult time for students. Like we were trying to figure out how do we learn, but also still from, you know, online and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I was like reflecting a lot, and I was just, you know, do I really want to continue on with Spanish classes? Maybe I can go study abroad. And I came across a study abroad program at MSU that was through a third party. And I met the amazing Dr. London McDonald, who is somebody who's like, is my hero, is my mentor still to this day.
Wow.
And it was one of those moments where I was like, hey, I'm going to be vulnerable and I'm going to go travel. Like, why not? Like, let me grow. Yeah, she's such a great professor, a great person. She was never my Spanish professor, which was interesting. She's always behind the scenes in a sense, because, you know, we were doing study abroad and whatnot. But she took the time to like equip me and say like, hey, I believe in you. So yeah, I just really wanted to shout her out because she's such an amazing professor. And I think MSU Denver is lucky to have her. And Laurel Lane from the business department, who's somebody that really kind of just went out of their way. And I think that every university, of course, has this, but there's so many really cool, inspiring people that people run into at their college journey, and they really make an impact. So yeah, I just wanted to throw that in there.
No, you got to. I appreciate that. London was actually one of the first. She was administrator and faculty at the time when I started, gosh, 11 years ago. And she's one of the first people I had conversations with. So I couldn't agree with you more. I actually saw too in my, you know, crazy deep dive, my internet stalking of you, that you actually nominated her and she won the Roadrunner shout out for that. Pretty much same story, which is fantastic. So I think that's also a huge testament to you and your commitment to your community, that when you have opportunities to, you are building and lifting other people up. So that's awesome. And we can all learn a little bit from that.
For sure. Yeah. Someone else that I forgot to shout out was Yolanda Ortega.
She was former
vice president of student affairs. She's been a huge mentor of mine and a mentor to the Latino community in Denver. Dr. Cynthia Barone as well, too. She's definitely one of my mentors as well. I'm not sure if Dave Barassa is still at, I think he's at C2 Hub, maybe? He used to be in CMEI.
Yeah, David is still here. C2 Hub, you're right. You nailed it. Yeah. But I do also agree that, well, I'm sure every organization, every institution of higher learning has those faculty that are those unique people that go out of their way to help students. I think the likelihood of students running into those here at MSU Denver is a lot higher. I think our smaller class sizes lend to that, but I also think it's just the commitment and the mission buy-in of our faculty and our staff in these spaces to be able to say, nope, I understand. I was never your faculty member, Jeremy, but you were saying that you want to do this XYZ and I have an expertise and a skill that can maybe lend itself that way. Let me help you in the space. And then the fact that you were still years later in a mentoring relationship with somebody that you never took a class from, I think is the epitome of MSU Denver.
Most definitely. And growing up, I was always like one or two of the Latino kids in a class full of like white students and whatnot. And it was so cool for me to go to MSU Denver my first year and have a classroom full of diversity from different backgrounds and different ages. And It just felt so much more inspiring. I totally would have done my master's program at MSU Denver if there was the right program.
Sure.
And so hopefully one day we'll get more master programs and maybe PhD programs, because I would love to continue on education, higher education at MSU if I could.
I get it. I have to sometimes remind myself and slow my like internal monologue role of like, yeah, absolutely, we got to do all those things. We've only had graduate programs since what, 2012? We're still very young in that space. And to see the growth that we've had in those has been really fantastic, but I'm with you. And I think the future is bright for that type of learning. And I don't know about your experience in your master's program, but when I got my master's degree, what I appreciated so much is that it was very project-based. It was very hands-on learning-based. It was real-world application. And so being in a classroom with people that have similar career goals, ambitions, but maybe different lived experiences, when we'd have to find ourselves in this group work or in this, how do we take the knowledge that we've learned and apply it in these spaces? My gosh, just having that diversity of thought was such an incredible asset that I do think equipped me better to handle like my professional life, just simply because we're not often in a room surrounded by just a singular type of demographic,
right?
We're working across political aisles. In your case, we're working across ethnic and racial differences. We're working across identity differences. And all of those lived experiences provide us just with such a unique way to come to a solution that might challenge that status quo, right? It might be different. It might be a different way than we've tackled it historically, but with the eyes on having the greatest and largest impact for the most amount of people.
Yeah, 100%.
Did you want to talk about your time as the delegate or what that looked like?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I don't know if you want me to walk through like how a person gets to go or...
Sure. I mean, I think it'd be of interest to a lot. It's of interest to me. And so since I care and this is this podcast, I'm going to say, yeah, people are going to care.
For sure. Yeah. So essentially you can go through your congressional district. So there's 8 of them in Colorado, or you can go through the state itself at large. What I did was I was like, well, I definitely want to go. I think it'd be a great opportunity to go. So I decided to start with my congressional district. And in there, we meet with like the committee members from the congressional district that I have ran and been a part of the system for years. And you give a speech. And after you give your speech, you wait a little bit and then they vote on it. And very thankful that I was one out of two of the youngest people to get to go from CD7. And then if you wanted to run at the state level, then there's like this state assembly that you go to, and then you give a speech to the whole state, and they elect a certain amount of people to go. And within that process too, you get, if you wanted to be like a presidential elector, meaning that you, if you wanted to sign for the electoral votes with Governor Polis, you could have done that. And there's just other avenues as well. Like you could, if you're like already a current elected official, you could run as that. But yeah, it was definitely a process in terms of just like figuring out like, where do I start? Where do I go? How can I get my foot in the door in a sense, or ensure this happens? So yeah, I did that from the congressional district. And then after that, you are responsible for funding your travels and expenses. And I know at first it might sound like, geez, you basically had to work so hard to get to go, but then you have to pay for your way to get to go. But one thing that people don't realize as well too, once you are elected to go from your districts or at the state level, fundraising starts to happen. It kind of turns into like a campaign season. You're basically going around and saying, hi, I'm so-and-so. I'm going to represent my congressional district. And people start donating. And I was very thankful and having that launch from being a student government, kind of launching myself into initiatives and organizations, bringing my chair to the table, multiple, you know, communities across the state. They all supported me. And I was very thankful for that. But the process itself, like going out there, just sitting in the convention center, and then you're like, well, these people are real, because I've always seen them on TV right. The whole time. And it was a good week, very long days. We didn't really get much sleep, like 3 to 4 hours a night. And that wasn't because we were out like having fun. It was right. More like, you know, we're going to sessions, we're going to Hispanic caucuses, we're going to community caucuses, like, you know, based on your identity, meeting with elected officials. You know, it was almost like a conference. And then, yeah, we were there pretty late every night. Very grateful to have gone. It was an experience that I will forever remember. And I think that in the next 4 years, it should be exciting to kind of start that process. But yeah.
That's awesome. Now, how much of your speech did you write versus ChatGPT?
How much of my speech? I will say, I think ChatGPT is a good resource. I use it for emails a lot, especially when you're on the go, you know, like you want to sound professional and polite.
Sure.
But I will say that when it comes to my speeches, I really try super hard to come from the heart. Definitely, it's a process. I still get nervous in speeches, but I try to make it sound authentic.
I fully agree. It takes me back. It's one of my favorite memories from my initial undergrad experience. So this was, you know, 20 plus years ago. But I wrote this paper. I was taking a politics and like Greek history type of class. I was a religion major. So we took a lot of co-curricular types of courses. So whether it was a literary course or a history class or a sociology class, you name it. So this was a political science class that I was in, and it was like political thought from Plato to someone. I can't even remember. And I had to write this paper about someone that we must have been speaking about. And the whole thesis was about the idea that this guy, this politician at the time, never actually said anything. He just was a very persuasive orator. Like he got you reeled in and he made you feel like, I'm sure the eye contact was there. I'm sure the words, to your point, were authentic and they felt natural. And he was just very charismatic. And so my entire thesis statement was like, this guy said nothing. He just really presented it really well. And that's why he was effective. And I'll never forget that my professor, I think I got like a C- on this paper. My professor's comments were like, oh, it appears as though you fall into the same fate. And that I said nothing. But it always sticks with me is because I'm sure I was like 19, 20 years old. I probably like went home and cried about my C-. Now at, you know, 42, I think it's the funniest thing that any professor could possibly say. My whole idea was like, oh, no, he never actually said anything. And my professor says, yeah, neither did you. But I'd tell that adage kind of for the fact that I think you're entirely right, that when we give speeches and when we're in that space, especially for something like this, where this is such a opportunity for you in your cross-sectional identities, whatever those might be, to be able to say, no, I want to be a person that represents those identities at this next space. And I want to have this opportunity to hear what has to be said, to have an impact, to have my chair at the table, as you've been talking about. And so I'm relieved to hear that, well, you know, our AI resources are fantastic for certain things, that there still is some integrity in this idea of who are you, what do you want to say, and why would your impact be felt? And that that was persuasive, because I do think there's some things technology can't do for us. And a lot of it is that speaking from the heart and making sure that you're making those really genuine connections with people with the words that you're saying and how you say them.
Yeah, especially delivery too. Something that I have like learned to do is like to really make like eye contact with people in the room and take pauses. And yeah, ChatGPT can't really.
They can't. But do make sure that you actually have a point to say, or otherwise that charisma might get you a C- as well.
Fair enough. Yeah. My family's from like the Colorado, New Mexico area. I have a lot of family here. But deep down, I love the ocean. I'm a swimmer. And yeah, I love to be by the water.
I'm with you, brother.
But then again, like my family's here, my community's here. So I think most likely I'll probably just be traveling a lot back and forth to the ocean back. But yeah, I mean, I definitely would love to run for office. And I don't know what that's going to look like. I think there's many opportunities for 2025 and 2026. I definitely would love to 100% run for office and really help the community out there. I think just within times right now, and I hope it's inspiring other young people to run as well too. I think we need more representation from different backgrounds, ages. But that's my next goal, is to find a place where I can best represent community and to help community as well.
Oh, that's awesome. I love to hear that. And I'm with you. I am about as water baby as you could possibly get. And so, I mean, I grew up in Los Angeles and went to school in San Diego. So you couldn't not find me at the beach on any given day. Even to this day, with as limited water as we have in Colorado, we go camping a lot. And so we'll be in the mountains usually by a lake because we like to fish. And who doesn't like looking at a lake? But it could be 35 degrees. And I'm still like, all right, going in. See you guys later. And my wife and my friends will all be like, oh my God, why do you just go in the water? I was like, I don't know. It just calls to me.
Yeah, same here. Like, so I swim every day. I swim laps, like 80 laps every day. Like when you're just in the water, it just makes you feel more productive throughout your day. And yeah, I totally hear
you. So do you subscribe to the Michael Phelps diet then and eat, you know, 6,000 calories?
I'm pretty sure I probably do. I probably do in some capacity. Yeah. My mom's always saying like, why do you eat so much? I'm like, I guess swimming.
I swim a lot. I know. Yeah. The ironic part for me is I'm not like a great swimmer. Like I'm a fine swimmer. I can swim. I can stay afloat. I surf. Like all that stuff is fine. But like, I don't know that if someone was like swim 80 laps that I'd last very long without a fear of drowning. So it's one of those things that you can be both. You can still be like, no, I'm in awe of this water and realize that it can suffocate me. But at the same time, like just put me in it. You know, I just feel like a more human version of me when I've submerged in cold water.
Yeah. I guess one of the reasons why I chose swimming is because you can just go at your own pace.
Yeah.
And that's something that really like got me in high school because everyone was doing soccer and football and like all these other things. And I just really wanted something that I could be in control of. And even if my times were slow, like, you know, while competing, it was just like, this is my lane, my road in a sense. And it was something that I could control. And
sure.
I mean, either one day you're going to get to the other side. It may take a while, but you know, so.
Just keep swimming, as they say.
100%, yeah.
No, I do love that. Now, you probably don't love the chlorine smell, or maybe you do. Maybe you're one of those guys that's like the chlorine is like how I feel when I smell like freshly mown lawn. I'm like, it's time to play baseball. Let's go. So maybe you like the chlorine smell. I think that would drive me nuts.
I think I'm immune to it already because I've worked at rec centers in Lakewood and whatnot. And I've worked at Waterworld many summers. And it's so strange. I love sunscreen. Like, I love the smell of sunscreen.
It's awesome.
Important advice here. Wear sunscreen every day.
I know.
Even if you work in an office. Like, it's so important. Yeah, I wish I would have been told that when I was in high school or not. But yeah, that's just an interesting, I guess, fact about myself. Sunscreen.
I get it. It's better than being a child of the 80s where we just threw baby oil on ourselves to get more of a tan. So, you know, things have gotten a little bit better that at least we don't do that anymore. But yeah, the sunscreen's a real deal. All right. Well, being cognizant of your time, since I know it's the middle of your day as well, it is now time for rapid fire questions.
All right.
First, what was your favorite MSU Denver memory?
Let's see. Oh, gosh. There wasn't like a particular memory, but I loved being in the Tivoli and just being by CMEI, like student government, just being around community, even just like walking from building to building and walking by the house that my family used to live in as well too. So just being a part of community and being a part of history from my family and whatnot, so that's something I miss a lot every day, just kind of being in that centerpiece.
That's awesome. I love that. All right. What does it mean to you to be a roadrunner?
I love that we're called roadrunners because without MSU, I couldn't see my road or my pathway. And I think it's so cool that MSU Denver really emphasizes you can choose your own road and you can run it however fast you want to, however slow you want to. To me, it really means that as I'm out in the world right now and as I continue to go out, anything's possible. And it's up to how much work I want to put in, how fast I want to go at it. It really means that I have the freedom to make a really good positive impact so someone else can join this Roadrunner road. I'm really hoping that my younger cousins and whatnot, I think the youngest ones is like 12. So we have a while for our next college person, but I'm really hoping that they go to MSU and I really hope that they continue on the MSU tradition. So
that's awesome. You also are just the spitting image of our marketing department right now. I think you named three of our former marketing campaigns in your answer, which I love. That means it worked.
Yeah, nice.
Right? We talked about transforming our communities because we had the transforming lives, transforming communities. Then you talked about running your own road, mm-hmm. which is awesome. Reimagining our possibilities. So that's great. If you could just throw in Changemaker, then we could be just a solid decade of marketing.
I do love the Changemaker one.
I know, like, it's a good one. Yeah, it is a good one.
100%.
I love that. All right, final question. If you could put a billboard on campus with a piece of advice for all students to see, what would it say?
Yeah, this is something I've been thinking about because I've listened to the podcast and other speakers and they've given really great advice. And if there is a billboard, I think I would say, like, don't be afraid to show your light. I think everybody on campus has, like, we're in a sense carrying a candle. And, you know, a lot of students come to MSU. The candle's there, but the light hasn't started. All we need to make sure is that let the world show what your light is about. Don't be afraid for, like, some wind to pick up. It's never going to get blown out. And continue to move forward. I think that's what I would say. I hope that was inspiring.
It was. No, I love it. I think you're right. I think sometimes it's hard to forget when we're saddled with whatever baggage we're feeling or trauma that we have in certain times and spaces and whatever, you know, season of life we're in. It's sometimes hard to forget that our light is still there and it might be dim, but that doesn't mean that it's gone away. And so we need to nurture that. And sometimes, at least for me, it's just getting out of my own way.
Definitely.
So I love that idea of figure out what your light is, figure out how you need to display it, and don't be afraid to do that. I think it's very thoughtful and I appreciate it. I love when I'm speaking with young people and the fact that you've even had conversations with your friends about, hey, you're going to be on this one day. So I'm just glad to know that this is meeting people where they're at and that hopefully having an opportunity to have a dialogue that maybe they haven't been in the time. So
for sure. Yeah.
I appreciate it.
No, yeah. Thank you for all the work you've done too. And hey, you could be on the Today Show. Like,
you hey, know, you
like,
never know. I mean, I'll Google, make sure that Hoda's actually out and then, you know, I'll submit my package. So.
Yeah, thank you so much for, you know, having me on. And wherever I go, MSU Denver is truly going to be somewhere I keep with me. Like, it's the story of my life. So I'm very grateful to share that experience. And
I love it.
Hoping one day I could come back and, you know, like, my friends also telling me this. They're like, you're going to give, like, a graduation speech one day. I'm like, oh, like, maybe. We'll see.
Hey, well, you know, I don't just schedule podcast hosts. I also schedule commencement speakers. So you got an in here. Well, awesome. It was really a pleasure to get to speak with you. And again, we're very, very proud of the work that you're doing on behalf of our communities for us and excited to tell your story to our wide range of listeners here on Bird Talk.
Most definitely. Yeah. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Well, enjoy the rest of, what is today, Tuesday?
Yeah.
My God, the rest of your Tuesday.
It's only Tuesday.
It does. It does. I wish it was.
For sure. But awesome. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we'll keep in touch and I'll see you soon.
Thank you so much. Have a great day, mm-hmm. everyone.
You too.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Bird Talk, special accommodation provided by University Advancement. Thank you to Ruby Matheny, Brandy Rideout, production provided by David Sharman, and I'm your host, Jamie Hurst. Keep running, roadies.